The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. This is the Empowerment Hour. I can promise you, no matter what your background or state of being, you will have information that will allow you to live a longer and healthier life. We break our program up into segments. The first is always health and healing, giving you only qualified information from peer-reviewed journals, but very different than what the mainstream media covers. So when I'm going to talk about how you can live better by eating certain foods, that's all good science. Then in our issues of the day, I'm going to share, too, a commentary from Professor Bill Quigley on working and poor in America, meaning you're working, but you're sure not rich, and what that's about. But then I was asked a question on a recent program by a listener who said that, a vegetarian diet's not healthy, a meat-based diet is. And they were using as their reference two things. They were mentioning Dr. Joseph Marcola, very popular internet physician who dispenses lots of information, and also the Weston Price Foundation, which advocates for a high-protein, animal-based diet. I recently filmed Dr. Joel Fuhrman for a new film on extending the lifespan, and he responded, so I will share you his in-depth response. It's a really interesting and provocative answer. Then also, good intentions can ease pain and add pleasure. I'll get to that. That's a new study out of Science Daily. And my guest in the second part of our program will be Evelyn Pringle. Evelyn is a multi-award-winning investigative journalist focusing on exposing corruption in corporate America and in our government and governmental agencies. We're going to talk about the FDA, Big Pharma, and creating diseases that do not exist to sell us drugs we shouldn't have. So you will not hear this in any of the other mainstream media. You will hear today, because we don't want your kid diagnosed with parental disorder, where they are defiant. So they may be being defiant against your parents, a disorder. Now they have social a disorder, where if you're defiant about any social issue, you have a psychiatric illness. This is all nonsense. And yet this is passing as good science. It's not good science. We'll deal with it, and we will deconstruct it. Now I'm going to start today with something that's brand new. And here's what it says. The American Medical Association, their Journal of Ethics, has decided that it would be a good idea if we could have mandated participation in experimental vaccine trials, quote, for the greater good of society. In this article, two doctors from Oxford University in the UK advocate forcibly injecting individuals with experimental vaccines, quote, for the greater good of society. So we're concerned because based upon how powerful ALEC is, the hundreds of corporations that meet regularly with your state legislators to determine what laws would be in their interest and what rules they want to exclude, imagine that your state passes a law that you cannot say no. That just like jury duty, you could be selected to receive experimental vaccines. Now, normally these experimental vaccines are given to children in state orphanages who have no advocates. The state certainly isn't there to protect them and help them. or in slums, or in Haiti, where they've done a lot of that, or in Africa, where they've done a lot more of it, out of the public eye. But now, they want to make it easy. Let's just make it that anyone that we decide we need to have will come in and be forced to get a vaccine. This is the newest thing. Not science fiction. This is what they're working on. And this was published in the in an article entitled, "Should Participation in Vaccine Clinical Trials Be Mandated?" Quote, "Compulsory involvement in vaccine studies." Whoa. Well, would you want an experimental vaccine that could injure you, that could put foreign viruses and bacteria into your body? I don't think so. Good news, if you want to help your eyes, vitamin D can help combat the effects of aging in the eyes. Now, this is from the Biotechnology and Biological Sciences Research Council, and it showed that vitamin D made a major difference. This was published in Neurobiology of Aging. So, how much vitamin D would you need on a daily basis to have better eyes and to slow down the aging of the eyes? About 2,000 units. That's not a lot. To put it in perspective, when you go out in the sun and at least one-third of your body is exposed to the sun for 20 minutes, you're getting about 20,000 units. So it's not a lot, but we need it. Now, I'm always asked this question, and I always give them the same answer based upon the science. Gary, if I want to have wine because of my culture and just enjoying it, it relaxes me. Is there any difference between red wine and white wine as far as its health benefits? The answer is yes. Only red wine provides healing. Now, this is from Boston University Medical Center, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal, Journal of Women's Health. And here's what it says. Aromatase inhibitors prevent the conversion of androgens to estrogens and could play a role in the development of breast cancer. This study of premenopausal women consisted of crossover intervention. I'm reading from the act, that's why it's a little dry, to determine if there was a difference between red wine and white wine and its effects on this aromatase inhibitors. They drank 8 ounces, which is an average glass of wine, followed by a white wine a month at a time. So red wine 1 month, white wine 1 month, and then they did all this blood testing. And they tested for estrogen metabolism, free testosterone, luteinizing hormones. And what they found was this. Only red wine improved your body's hormones and made a significant positive effect. White wine, nothing. So there you have it, and that can help you. Why? Why can red wine help prevent breast cancer? Because it has polyphenols, and polyphenols lower the risk of breast cancer. Now, mind you, grape juice, just a good old, you know, American Concord grape juice, that will give you about 3 times the amount of polyphenols as a glass of wine. So either way, it's good. And this is another study that confirms this, and this is published in Free Radical Biology and Medicine, and here's what it says, quote, "Can eating grapes slow or prevent the onset of age-related macular degeneration, which, by the way, millions of Americans suffer from, which is the number one cause of blindness?" I'll quote this. It says, "Grapes can help prevent age-related blindness. The study compared the impact of antioxidant-rich diet on vision and found that grapes made all the difference in the world. Quote, the protective effect of grapes in this study was remarkable, offering a benefit for vision at old age, even if grapes were consumed only at young age." End quote. And that was from a Dr. Finneman, Department of Biological Sciences, Fordham University in New York. So here's my suggestion. Now, we just learned that grape juice and grapes and red wine can help prevent menopause, as symptoms of menopause and breast cancer in women. Now we learn that eating those grapes and drinking the grape juice can also help protect our eyes. So, one more reason to have grapes in your diet. Red, blue, black. Also, this is an interesting study from Carnegie Mellon University. They discovered that an element commonly found in nature might provide a way to neutralize the potentially lethal effects of a compound known as shigatoxin. And what is it? It's manganese. Now, we advocate about 5 milligrams of manganese on a regular basis. And shigatoxicosis is the most common during foodborne outbreaks, like the widespread E. coli outbreak this past summer in Germany and Western Europe, where more than 3,700 people were infected and 45 died. And after entering the body, shigatoxin is secreted by the infecting bacteria, and the toxin then attaches itself to the surface receptor on a cell's plasma membrane and enters the cell through a process called endocytosis. Well, normally, when a harmful substance enters a cell in this way, it's wrapped in a package called an endosome and sent directly to the cell's lysosome, where it is degraded and discarded. Quote, that's exactly the process of shigatoxin avoids. It would be neutralized if it were to get degraded, so it had to find some way to get out of being sent to the lysosome. And so when they use manganese, just regular old manganese, it helps stop that whole process. So, one way that you can help yourself if you ever find that you've had any food poisoning, take 5 milligrams of manganese. The other day I mentioned on this program that one of the ways we can stay younger longer, slow down the aging process, was very simple. Eat fewer calories. While I was writing up the notes for the program, there was a television on in the background, and some of the staff were studying commercials and programs to see what were people watching, what were popular programs. So here I'm writing up a whole report that I'm going to be doing in the next week about how to live a longer life. And I've given some of that information already. And atop my list was eating fewer calories, and one of the people mentioned, hey Gary, take a look at this. Here's a guy who's being encouraged to eat a 6-pound hamburger. And could you imagine how many calories that is? I said, well, just do the math. You're getting 4 calories per gram, and about half of that hamburger per pound, which is 8 ounces, would be protein. So 8 times the grams, 28 grams to an ounce, so that you got 8 times 28 times 6. Whoa. Thousands of calories that guy was consuming. Could you imagine attack on his heart? By the way, at the Institute of Applied Biology, we did something one day, just as a test. We took all the people who worked at the Institute, including all of us scientists, and we took a sample of blood after we exercised. Everyone was asked to go out and to jog or walk around the block twice, and immediately we took blood. Then and it had to be on a fasting stomach in the morning. Then we went out and we were asked, eat your regular meal, whatever that is. And then came back and within an hour took another blood sample. Here's what we found. When you super oxygenate the blood, and that's what you're doing when, you know, when you're exercising vigorously, your blood turns red. And when you get ozone, real red, which is terrific. When you're in a hyperbaric oxygen therapy, extremely red. Oh, that's good. That's super good. When you sit all day, your blood turns dark. When you eat a meal, well, the meal I ate, my blood turned red, but everyone else ate the standard American diet, pizzas, hamburgers, hot dogs, milkshakes. Their blood was dark and milky. And you could actually see stringy-looking fat, white fat, stringing through there. And then we took a sample of that, and we put it under the microscope, and you could see the aggregation or clumping of red blood cells. Now, listen to the message here. Every time you eat a hamburger, a bologna sandwich, a grilled cheese sandwich, a pizza, your blood thickens, cells clump, and you're much more susceptible to a stroke. And whereas if you have salads, nuts, seeds, legumes, pulses, root vegetables, potatoes, turnips, parsnips, soups, your blood does just the opposite. It has greater oxygenation. It has, with greens, you thin the blood, less likely to have a stroke. So if you want to keep a stroke away, have garlic and onion and your greens. If you want to increase your likelihood of having a stroke, have your typical high-protein meal. And then you say, well, how many people have strokes? Well, how about one every 15 seconds? This year, nearly 500,000 Americans will die of heart attacks and strokes. Combine the two and you're up to about 700,000, 600 and some thousand. Whole lot of people who wouldn't have died otherwise had to just paid attention to something. Now that leads me into the fewer calories equal longer telomeres in men. This is from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. It just came out today. I'm going to quote this. The American Journal of Clinical Nutrition reveals the presence of longer telomeres among men who consume fewer calories in comparison with those who consume more. Telomeres are protective caps at the end of chromosomes that shorten with age and are used as a biomarker of cellular aging. Researchers at Hebrew University in Israel and University of Medicine Dentistry in New Jersey analyzed men and women who participated, and what they found was that those who had healthier diets, who had more salads, and things are not dense. Where are you going to get all these calories? Well, meat. Fried foods, donuts, ice cream. These are high-calorie foods. So every time you have one of those high-calorie meals, you're shortening your telomeres, speeding up your aging process. So if you want to, now here's what I showed earlier, that you can not only slow down this, you can actually reverse it. You can create more mitochondria, new mitochondria, hence new energy. You can create new mitochondria in the brain, hence you rejuvenate the brain. You can repair dendrites. Earlier this week, if you didn't have a chance to listen to it, we had a person I've worked with. Her name is Marie McGovern, a wonderful human being, very conscientious, and an academic adjunct professor at NYU, a master in art history. And a procurer of art, and in any case, for institutions. But then she suffered from advanced Alzheimer's. The key was to take everything that could cause inflammation out of her diet. Then, when that was done, then detoxify her to naturally chelate out mercury, lead, cadmium, get the silver fillings in her mouth out. And then, as you start to see a person detoxifying, you start to see them rejuvenating. And then within a very short period of time, they'll say, gee, I woke up energized this morning. Or, wow, normally in mid-morning or mid-afternoon, I'd start to take a dip in my energy, but now I'm having my juices, I don't. And the juices are not bad tasting. I mean, a delicious juice is apple and celery and cucumbers. Delicious. But it stabilizes blood sugar, but it chelates out minerals, and it helps kill bacteria and viruses, and it cleans the blood, and it thins the blood, so you're less likely to have a stroke. In the afternoon, a watermelon juice. Nothing is tastier than a watermelon juice with lemon and lime. And that helps get rid of parasites and bacteria and viruses and bad elements within the intestine, but it also is a great liver flush. And we have to keep flushing our liver. Why? Because all the body's toxins have to go through the liver, and they're a process called conjugation, where the body will bring, through glutathione, it'll bring all these bad things together, combine them in a way that they can be expelled in either the urine or the feces. Out through the bladder, they go into the urine, and out through the intestine, they go into the feces. When you're taking in clean, living things, this happens. You get healthier. You have less calories. You lose weight. Your blood sugar returns normal. Your blood pressure returns normal. This is not hard to do. From our human interest segment, this is a study from Science Daily. This is mainstream science. And this is an article published in Social, Psychological, and Personality Science. And here's what it says. A nurse's tender, loving care really does ease the pain of a medical procedure. And grandma's cookies really do taste better if we perceive them to be made with love. And that includes medicine, relationships, parenting, and business. Quote, the way we read another person's intentions changes our physical experience of the world. This is according to Professor Kirk Gray and the author of this new study. The results confirm that good intentions, even misguided ones, can soothe pain, increase pleasure, and make things taste better. That's what the study concludes. It describes the ability of benevolence to improve physical experience as a vindication of the power of good. While it seems clear that good and evil intentions can change the experiences of social events, think of a reaction to mean-spirited, cutting remarks compared to gentle teasing spoken with a smile. This study shows that physical events are influenced by the perceived contents of a person's mind. Quote, it seems we also use the intentions of others as a guide for basic physical experience. And it really makes a difference. So, how would I put this? Well, I would put it this way. How many times have we had a problem and we really needed someone to speak with? We needed to get something out and get some feedback. Where I grew up, the people who were most likely to not only encourage us to talk with them, but we always felt better after we did, was our grandparents. And then our favorite aunts and uncles. And then someone in the community, a school teacher who was more than a teacher. In my case, it was a woman named Miss Helmix, who was our social teacher. She was a very large woman, I'm guessing around 6 feet, about 200 pounds. And she always encouraged the best of us. And if there was a troublemaker in the class, which there frequently was, she would go to that person's home. She wouldn't call them the principal's office. She wouldn't reprimand it. She would simply go there and try to find out what was going on at their home that could solve a problem. And as a result, a lot of people would have been thrown out of school or reprimanded or stigmatized were not because of how she intervened. Many times, she lived one block over from me. I'd walk over to her house when I was in junior high school and high school, and I had a question. And we'd just sit there on her porch outside, and I'd ask her my question. She'd give me an answer, and she'd go brew some sassafras tea and put honey in it. Never forget those moments. And what really impressed me about her was that she always had a smile. No matter how bad the problem was, she always had a smile. Now think of the impact if someone approaches us or works with us with good intentions. Then even when there's a mistake, even when something doesn't work out, you say it's okay. Let it go. Forget it. It's all right. How many times in life do we all make mistakes? And we would hope that there would be a perception that our mistake was with good intention. And someone met that good intention with a, it's okay, let it go. And then you pick it up and you go from there. Versus the person who has not a good intention. They intend to do something that helps them and not us, that manipulates us, where we're being open and vulnerable and trusting, and they're being manipulative for whatever need. That's why I do the social issue part of this program, because we, the public, can frequently be extremely vulnerable because of our openness. We have good intentions. We hire people to office thinking they're going to make laws that protect us, that have bureaucracies that help us, and that they're not going to make life rough for us, and they're not going to try to manipulate us. And then one day we find out that in most cases our bureaucracies are swollen, corrupt, inefficient, and we're paying for it, and yet they don't shrink, they grow. The never-ending wars, the always increasing meddling in our lives, the suppression of our rights and freedoms. And then we look around to say, but why aren't you standing up for me? I thought with good intentions you were going to protect me. Doctor, I didn't think that you would kill 60,000 people by giving them a COX-2 inhibiting drug called Vioxx. We trusted your intentions. Now we find out you were getting money on the side. Every patient, one case, $500 for an antiarthritic drug. Every time a doctor put a patient on that particular drug, they got $500 in cash from the pharmaceutical rep. We weren't told that. If a doctor says, I'm going to give you this drug, Gary, to ease pain, and I'm receiving $500 because of this from the pharmaceutical company, I say, hold on a second. What do you know about the drug? How did it compare with diet and omega-3 fatty acids and other anti-inflammatories like cat's claw and devil's claw and cayenne? Oh, I don't bother with any of that because I don't make any money from that. And this is good science. It's not good science. And then 60,000 Americans die. Not a single doctor apologizes to a single one of these patients, because in the depositions and in the pleadings before the settlement, one of the questions that was raised was, did your doctor contact your family and apologize for the fact that the drugs they gave your loved one killed them? And the answer was no. No one apologized. So no one was held guilty. No one's reputation was adversely affected. 60,000 Americans died. Now imagine, more Americans died from one pharmaceutical company's single drug, Vioxx, than all of the 10 years of American casualties in Vietnam. We built a monument in Washington, rightly so, to those fallen soldiers in Vietnam. But where is the monument to those 700,000 killed each year at the hands of medicine? Good intentions didn't ease the pain. They created more. So you have to look at both sides of that issue. And a lot of times I'll hear people say to the average American, well, you're just stupid. And I'm saying, before you call someone stupid, ask yourself, what if they're simply very trusting and very open and very vulnerable to other people making proper choices for them, for their kids, in the curriculum in school, before they realize some multinational corporation managed through lobbying and ALEC groups to get their textbooks to be used that do not teach kids the right things, and therefore the teacher who wants to challenge this is now put into a rubber room, and bad curriculum is taught by good and bad teachers, and then we end up graduating students who are not fully prepared for the world they live in. So I look at something from the broadest possible perspective. Now, this is our issue of the day, and we're going to give this, take a short break, and come back with your comments. This is for all of you who believe in the idea that a high-protein diet, a meat-based diet, the Weston Price Foundation diet, the diet advocated by Dr. Mercola, who does come down, I believe, on the right side of a lot of issues, but he and I share a difference of opinion, politely so, on this issue. And this is a direct response that was from Dr. Joel Furman, board-certified family physician specializing in preventative and medicine, reversing disease through nutrition, and he's the author of Eat to Live. Let me quote Dr. Furman's response. The Weston Price Foundation is named in honor of a Cleveland dentist, author of the book Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. In the 1930s, upon observing that a large number of his patients had poor dental health, Dr. Price traveled to remote regions of the world and found that people in those areas who were still eating diets consisting of unprocessed foods had healthier teeth than his patients, who were eating large amounts of processed foods. He concluded that poor dental health was the result of nutritional deficiencies. Now, the Weston Price Foundation is a relatively small nonprofit with a modest budget, but its leaders and members have been very effective in advocating a meat-centered diet with lots of butter and whole raw milk. Unfortunately, although some of its recommendations are laudable, such as the admonition to avoid highly processed foods and the warning that most popular vegetarian and vegan diets are not ideal, many others are entirely out of step with modern nutritional science. They promote a range of irresponsible and potentially dangerous ideas. Here's what they are. Butter and butter oil are our superfoods, which contains an X factor discovered by Weston Price. Not true. Glandular organ extracts to promote health and healing of a corresponding organ. Not true. Poached brains of animals should be added to other ground meats for better nutrition. Not true. Raw cow's milk and meat broth should be fed to newborns who don't breastfeed rather than infant formula. Not true. Regular ingestion of clay, which is azolimite mineral powder because the clay particles remove pathogens from the body. Not true. There are benefits of feeding sea salt to infants and babies. Not true. Fruits and vegetables should be limited in children's diets. I repeat that one. Fruits and vegetables should be limited in children's diets. Whoa, is that not true? Now, there are plenty of organizations offering woefully out-of-date and inaccurate dietary advice. So I do not want to give the impression that the Weston Price Foundation's is alone in this regard. But there is limited space in this single review. How to feed your baby. Weston Price advocates a severely deficient and dangerous diet for infants and children that has the potential to cause a lifetime of medical problems, reduced brain function, and an early death from cancer. Infants have their best chance of developing normally when they consume breast milk from well-fed mothers. But contrary to a plethora of scientific studies indicating that breast milk should be the only food for the first 6 months, Sally Fallon, founder and president of the Weston Price Foundation, and co-author Mary Enig of the book Nourishing Traditions, says that pureed meat, including organ meats, is an excellent early food for babies. What does the Weston Price Foundation recommend? One of the baby formula mixes cow's milk with heavy cream and other oils, while another is made of cow's liver, beef broth, whey powder, and various oils. It is well established in the scientific literature that a diet high in saturated fat and low in fruits and vegetables in early childhood is the leading cause of adult cancers. Infants fed cow's milk instead of breast milk or formula do not sufficiently get their iron, vitamin C, linoleic acid, or vitamin E, and take an excessive amount of sodium, potassium, and protein, which can lead to dehydration and kidney damage. For many years, the American Academy of Pediatricians has warned against the use of any whole milk from cows during the first year of life after it was found that infants given cow's milk develop iron deficiency and occult, meaning silent bleeding of the digestive tract. The resultant iron deficiency seen in children raised on cow's milk in early childhood leads to long-term changes in behavior and loss of intelligence that cannot be reversed even with correction of iron deficiency later in life. In other words, permanent brain damage can occur from feeding of whole cow's milk to babies. How can an organization offer nutritional advice so out of step with the world's scientific literature? Part of the blame can be placed at the feet of those who remain loyal to some of the original observations of Weston Price rather than his original intent. When Dr. Price traveled to remote areas, his intent was to find healthy solutions to his dental patients. When we look back with 70 years of scientific hindsight, we can see that his examination's conclusions were flawed. When he touted the health of primitive peoples, he was not aware of their very short life expectancies and high rates of infant death and endemic diseases and infection. It can be argued that few scientific researchers in the 1930s would have understood the complexity of multifactorial causation of health, disease, and longevity, and Price should not be held to today's higher standards. But the same cannot be said for his followers today. To advocate eating a diet high in saturated fat is to ignore all the nutritional research, especially of the past 40 years, that links this diet to shorter lifespans and higher rates of heart disease and cancer, and it's unconscionable. A Western Price website states, quote, people with high cholesterol live the longest, unquote, and that it's a myth for, quote, for good health, serum cholesterol should be less than 180, unquote. Adding, quote, there is no greater risk for heart disease, even at levels as high as 1,000 milligrams per deciliter, unquote. This doesn't jibe with every respected scientific authority in the world and is utterly ridiculous in light of thousands of respectable studies. The Western Price Foundation correctly points out that processed foods, sugar, and corn syrup and white flour are harmful, but nutritional deficiencies caused by junk food are not remedied by a diet high in meat and butter, animal products that are devoid of plant-derived phytonutrients, which promote health and slow the aging process. By contrast, the saturated fat in meat and butter raises cholesterol and is one of the significant causes of heart disease. Now, Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon and Mary Enig is a smorgasbord of woefully outdated and potentially dangerous advice. For example, quote, if you cannot get your family to eat organ meats when served as such, there are plenty of ways to add them to their food without their knowledge. Poached brains can be chopped up and added to any ground beef dish, as can grated raw liver, unquote. Even if it were not so clearly known that animal products in general need to be strictly limited in the diet, common sense would tell us not to eat the brains of animals in light of what is known about mad cow disease, which originates in the brain, and its human equivalent, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Nourishing Traditions is full of bad science and illogical reasoning, and its appeal is dependent on people's ignorance about nutrition. Fallon and Enig perpetuate long-held nutritional myths by referencing the same people who started the myths in the first place. Nutrition is a complicated subject, and it takes familiarity with a comprehensive body of scientific studies and articles to devise recommendations to prevent disease and promote longevity. Science is not perfect, but evidence builds on prior studies, and ongoing research attempts to test each hypothesis and check validity in an unbiased manner. Today we have 15,000 studies written since the 1950s documenting the link between a high saturated fat protein diet with low fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds and vegetables and beans, and an increased risk of heart attack and cancer. And while Nourishing Traditions has over 200 references, many are antiquated with poor observations. For the most part, the authors reference their own articles and those of other Western Price Foundation authors. Only 14 of the references are from peer-reviewed journals published in the last 10 years, and most of those 14, the authors misrepresented what was stated in the articles. By contrast, my book, Eat to Live, contains over 1,000 medical references to peer-reviewed medical journals, and they are accurate. Honorary Western Price Foundation board member and internet health guru Joe Mercola became the most public member of the foundation's contingency after the previous guru, Stephen Byrons, died of a stroke at the age of 45. Dr. Mercola claims that consuming pasteurized milk instead of raw milk causes autism and that coconut oils kill viruses in The Secret to Weight Loss, Detoxification, and Reversal of Heart Disease. And he has been reprimanded by the FDA to cease making these fraudulent health claims about this coconut oil and another health product. Mercola's website advocates that people fill out a detailed questionnaire, which costs $59, to help him determine which of these types they fall into. Instead of using blood type, eye color, shoe size, date of birth of your firstborn, or other silliness that alternative health entrepreneurs use to decide how much meat is right for your health, Mercola simply asks questions such as, how do you feel when you eat meat? And do you like dark meat or white meat? This is like asking a smoker if he feels better if he smokes to determine how much smoking is good for your health. He divides people into three categories: protein type, which is meat lovers, carbo type, veggie and grain lovers, and mixed type, everyone else. Mercola claims that to feel great and avoid disease and obesity, you must know your unique type. Mercola does not think avoiding meat is a good idea for most people because their metabolic type indicates that red meat is needed and good for them. He explains that while the Atkins diet is good because of its recognition of the glycemic index of food, it's not as good as his diet, which takes into account your metabolic typing. Mercola's views on diet and health fail Nutrition 101. Too much science contradicts him, but not everything he says is incorrect. He correctly points out that most vegetarians may not have excellent health because of their overdependence on grains. The literature is abundant with evidence that demonstrates that the foods with the best correlation with longer life and resistance of disease later in life are vegetables, beans, raw seeds, fruits, and raw nuts. Notice that grains are not included on the list. Eliminating animal products and continuing the consumption of processed grain is not a recipe for good health or longevity. The bottom line is most vegetarians are unhealthy. They eat too much processed food. Whole grains are not nutrient-rich foods. They can form a minor part of a good diet, but when they are baked, fried, toasted, shot out of cannons, or otherwise processed or adulterated, they become low-nutrient junk foods that are powerfully disease-promoting. There is good science to back up Mercola's contention that some people are not going to get all their nutritional needs on a vegan diet and will need to add supplementation to make their diet complete or even small amounts of meat. There are two very critical areas where Mercola departs from universally accepted science. First, if you add a large amount of animal products he recommends, including red meat and butter, and especially the large amounts he recommends for his protein type, you will have a diet that powerfully promotes heart disease and cancer. There's no genetic type that has immunity from such a high saturated fat disease-causing diet. And all Americans, not just some, develop atherosclerosis when they eat a diet so high in animal products. Over 90% of Americans eventually develop atherosclerosis and hypertension from the low intake of unprocessed vegetables, fruits, beans, nuts, and seeds, and a high intake of animal products. Diets like the ones Mercola recommends, especially if they include processed meat, and foods also lead to premature death, heart attacks, and stroke. And the second critical departure is that his metabolic typing questionnaire is not an accurate way to determine a person's nutritional needs. When he advises his protein type to eat a diet in which most calories are supplied by animal products, he's appealing to that person's food preferences and addictions. The more you crave something and the worse you feel when you stop consuming it, the more likely you are to be addicted to it. And then he goes on to talk about he's reviewed 60,000 articles, and Joel Fuhrman has, and the lower the caloric intake, the longer you live. He takes a shot at the Zone diet and the South Beach diet and these other high-protein diets, including Mercola's, and he also really excoriates the idea that these are healthy because he shows that they increase your rate of colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, breast cancer. And then this whole question, well, people in other cultures live longer. No, they don't. For example, the Inuit Greenlanders, who historically have been limited in their fruits and vegetables, have the worst longevity statistics in North America. Research from the past and present show that they die on average 10 years younger and have a higher rate of cancer than the overall Canadian population. Similar statistics are available for the high meat-consuming Maasai in Kenya. They eat a diet high in wild hunted meat and have the worst life expectancy in the modern world. Life expectancy is 45 years for women, 42 years for men. And African researchers report historically Maasai rarely live beyond the age of 60. Adult mortality figures on the Kenyan Maasai show that they have a 50% chance of dying before the age of 59. So that is a response by Dr. Joel Fuhrman to this whole idea of a high-protein diet, Western Price diet. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us.
My love has come.
to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Just a quick a promotion here to help us at the Progressive Radio Network raise some money. Mine is the only program out of all of them every day the week that does this. This is a brand new product, one I've not mentioned on the air before. It's my own invention. And for those of you who would like something that has wonderful nutrition, it's the Coco Magic Bar. Let me tell you what makes this organic, vegan, gluten-free, and kosher nutrition bar so good for you. First of all, no GMOs of any kind in here. Second, USDA certified organic, and it's gluten-free. Here are the ingredients in this delicious cocoa. It's coconut and chocolate. It has 12 grams of protein. 12 grams. That's almost as much as two eggs. It has the omega-3 fatty acids, 40 different antioxidants, 3 probiotics, low glycemic. Let me tell you, and you would never taste any of the things I'm going to tell you, you're going to taste a rich, delicious coconut blended with chocolate. You're getting a proprietary blend of whole foods, spirulina, barley grass, chlorella, wheatgrass juice, wheat sprouts, nori seaweed, acai berry, green tea extract, white tea, spinach, dulse, carrots, broccoli sprouts, parsley, alfalfa sprout powder, raspberries, pomegranate, blueberry, mulberry, goldenberry, apple, goji berry, Concord grape, grape seed extract, pine bark, mangosteen, hydrilea, strawberry leaves, ground flax seed, rice bran, beet juice, soy lecithin, acerola berry, rosehip, aloe vera juice, milk thistle, ginger, camu, lucima powder, maca powder, mesquite powder, probiotics, digestive enzymes, DHA, biopurine, which is a natural black pepper, hemp powder, and chia seeds. Whoa. No dairy, no refined sugars, no trans fats, no additives, no preservatives, and 100% of your daily fruits and vegetables based upon the content of those into your body. How about that? That is my new product. Kosher, gluten-free, vegan, high-protein, omega-3 fatty acids, antioxidants. You get 12 bars in a box. It's $45 per box. That's less than what you can buy if you bought it in a store, and there's no other place to buy it right now. I just got them in today. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and we just got them in. It's called, so you got the name right, Coco Magic Bar, the Coco Magic Bar. Plus, I didn't even mention the whole chocolate and all that's blended with. But what a bar. I defy anyone to find a healthier nutrition bar in the world. So you waited for a year. Now you got it. 877-627-5065. It'll be shipped out on Monday to you, and we will get them in our office later today. We close our 97th Second Street office. We only have our 83rd Street vitamin closet open now. And finally, tomorrow, snow or not, I'm going to be there giving that lecture at 1 o'clock on if it's this is my life, I'm going to live it. Hope to see you all there at that time. Let's say hello to Evelyn Pringle, award-winning investigative journalist, focusing on the corruption in government and corporate America. She's written so many important books. Nice to have you with us today, Evelyn.
Nice to be with you, Gary.
I'm only going to take one topic today. I'm going to invite you back because you are so talented in so many areas. I don't want to mix them. Here's my topic for you for today. I'm concerned that our government and the ALEC corporate lobbying groups are moving quickly to mandate that every child in the United States be given by law a teen screen. This originated down in Texas when he was Governor George Bush in the pharmaceutical industry, heavily promoted by the Hillary Clinton today. What's wrong with teen screen? What could happen if this does get implemented? What has happened in several cases where it was implemented? Tell us about teen screen in the pharmaceutical industry, working with the psychiatric community to make every child susceptible to being diagnosed as mentally ill.
Well, I think teen screen is just an outrageous idea. I thought it was in 2004 when I found out about it, first found out about it. And it's hard for me to believe that they're even still trying to do this to children. I mean, to think that every child in America, every child has to be screened for mental disorders is just ridiculous. I mean, these kids aren't mentally ill. And to label all these children with mental disorders, and they can't be verified. There is no test or anything to verify this. It's all a number of questions that they ask teenagers. And to be labeled on these questions that they ask in this teen screen, I call it a psychiatric drug dragnet, really.
Give us examples of teen screen and how they've gotten it into some schools. I'm sure you're familiar with one of the teenagers who took this and ended up being taken from her home and put into a mental institution and kept there for 6 months.
Oh, right. That was, Tolly, that was back in the mid-2000s that girl was taken from her home and put in a mental institution and drugged and with so many drugs and things and she gained all this weight. I mean, it was just terrible. Her parents couldn't get to see her, couldn't have any access to her. I mean, she was tormented, actually tortured. And then there was the one in Indiana that was screened in school without her parents' consent, and she was labeled with two mental disorders that were just ridiculous. I think social anxiety disorder, and then another one.
Compulsive,
I can't think of the top of my
obsessive
head.
Compulsive disorder, because she answered she liked to keep a clean bedroom, so they diagnosed her with compulsive disorder and social anxiety because she said she didn't feel comfortable in big, loud, noisy parties.
Right, right. I mean, this is how ridiculous it is, and the questions that they ask him is so silly that every teenager would have those thoughts that they ask them about, like, say, for instance, did you ever think that you weren't as smart or as good-looking or something as the other children? Well, of course adolescents and teenagers think this, probably 10 times a day about something. And I've always said when I looked at those questions, in order to pass that test, you would have to lie on every one. And you don't have to have very many that you answered yes to be labeled with mental disorders.
Just two.
So you'd have to lie on every one. You know, and I said, and if you did that, that even if you got away with that, from then on, in a teenager or an adolescent's mind, from then on, if they did have one of these normal thoughts or feelings, they would think, oh, my God, yes, I am mentally ill. They said that was on that test. Now, this is totally false. And to play with kids' minds like this, and it's a yes or no answer, so you can't explain anything. And so there's no way you're going to pass that test. I mean, I gave it to Senator Grassley's committee that was working, you know, to expose all the pharmaceutical industry's way of reeling in customers. They said they all took it and they all flunked. They all flunked the test, the teen screen test. So they were all mentally ill.
Okay, but here's the larger issue, Evelyn. We have had no movement in the United States media, not by the New York Times or the Miami Herald. No one has taken on the pharmaceutical industry for creating diseases that do not exist, making them up, and giving drugs for each one, and then giving the through the National Institutes of Mental Health, giving the power to psychiatrists and to hospitals to mandate that once you're diagnosed with these illnesses, you no longer have free will. You must then follow their procedures, or they're going to lock you up and medicate you.
Oh, you bet. And, you know, the thing that with these kids, when they get away with this labeling mentally ill, and then feeding them these drugs all through their childhood and teen years, when they grow up, there's no way they're going to get rid of that. And I said, when they labeled somebody bipolar or schizophrenic or something, there's no way they're ever going to get rid of that. That's going to follow them for life. And there's no way to verify that they ever had this disease or disorder, as they call them, or no way to verify that they didn't. But when anything like insurance companies, potential employers see this, that you have been charging for all these drugs for you to take all your life when you're a child and a teenager, they're never going to believe that you're not mentally ill. So these poor kids are going to grow up and they're going to have all these problems with getting insurance, being employed, all these things because of things like this teen screen and the drug companies behind it that, you know, they're the ones behind this teen screen. There's no doubt about it.
Of course.
You know, I mean, you might have to really dig, and tentacles are all over the place, but you'll find it at the end that they're in there.
But
they
did it. What bothers me is both the left and the right, the official left and the official right, have jumped on board to promote this, And I'm saying, look at the money trail. First, there's no science behind this. The people
right.
from the American Psychiatric Association sponsored Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 5 have added mm-hmm. all these dozens of new conditions. For example, if you don't like math, math defiance disorder. If you
right.
if you are too interested in health, a health disorder,
mm-hmm.
a phobia. If you really want to be healthy and fit, that's another disorder. If you speak out on any social issue, if you're against racism, or if you want to promote women's rights, if you want children's rights, suddenly that is a social defiance disorder where anyone protesting now can be labeled with one of these false diagnoses. Well, first I looked in the background. There's no science whatsoever behind any of these diagnoses. There's a group of people sitting around a table, all affiliated with pharmaceutical companies, with psychiatric associations, all deciding by vote what should be a disease, and then the pharmaceutical companies behind the scenes then saying, well, we have just the drug to treat that person, yet there's no studies those drugs work for any condition, and there couldn't be because there's no reality of the condition. And yet all this is being done with the full support of the Democrats and Republicans in Congress, the White House, the Clinton White House, the Bush White House, the Obama White House, the American media, and the American public, unfortunately, thinking that somehow there's science and medicine doing something for their benefit, are the ultimate victims. Your thoughts?
Oh, exactly. I mean, I would just say ditto to everything you've said. And a good example of this has been those SSRI antidepressants that started coming out in 87 with Prozac. Now, for all these years, they have fed those to everybody, including infants less than a year old. And now that the patents are all run out and they're not going to make that much money on them anymore, now the studies come out that say, well, you know, they really never did work, you know, and all the side effects that they had, the suicide, the birth defects, you know, the addiction to them, all the side effects over the years that the drug companies hid, but they've all been exposed now for being there, and our government knew it. But now they come out with the studies that say, well, you know, they really never did work. So the billions of dollars, it's the biggest health care fraud there ever was, is these psychiatric drugs over the last 20-some years, the new generations.
I am opposed to all psychiatric drugs. The only people I would absolutely recommend, I do support a great deal of electroconvulsive therapy, shock therapy, for psychiatrists and politicians only.
Yeah.
And then add in celebrities behind that. I'd love to see every Hollywood red carpet idiot get about 3,000 electroconvulsive therapy. They're already on cocaine and methamphetamine. Why not give them something else? Right? What
exactly.
human scum?
Exactly. And when you say about the amphetamines, there's another area, another one. You know, how many times are we going to have legal amphetamines in this country?
Well, we do Ritalin. Ritalin is a legal amphetamine.
And Adderall, that's an amphetamine. You
yeah.
know,
and now we have 10 million American children going to school each day taking a class 2 pharmaceutical because they were told there was something wrong with their brain chemistry.
Right, and then that went into those causing side effects that led to taking SSRI antidepressants and then to antipsychotics to telling them that these kids had the side effects.
If they live that long.
But they had bipolar, right.
Remember, the
number
one cause of death in 10 to 14-year-old boys is suicide. And do you know that they gave a 6-month-old baby one of the hard psychiatric drugs that justified it by saying it was bipolar because it both laughed and cried?
Where has
the American media? No one's really surprised at politicians and pharmaceutical companies and major corporations doing this and lobbyists. We expect that from them, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we do not expect the media to.
We don't have a
to support them.
Anymore.
We have none. They sell their drugs on every commercial. Well,
yep,
Evelyn,
yep.
Give us your website there.
Well, you know, I have my catalog of articles I have on, if you just write in Evelyn Pringle and blog, it will come up. And all my articles that I've written, there's 400 and some on there.
Evelyn Pringle, P-R-I-N-G-L-E. Evelyn out there in Green Bay, Wisconsin, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Always happy to be with you, Gary.
Takeaway message, you're not crazy. Your brain chemistry is not in balance. Your kids are neither. So don't let someone with this new coming up campaign to make all the teens be screened and try to convince us that it's all for our good to prevent a whole epidemic of mental illness in the United States. No, we don't have an epidemic of mental illness. We have an epidemic of greed. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Coming at you now, Danny Schechter, the News Dissector.